It's October 18th, 2015. It's Sunday, about 5:51 p.m. I'm out here in the desert again walking. Last time I was out here was Thursday night, and there was an extraordinary thunderstorm. Lightning storm, electrical storm, that evening. I had spines of lightning shooting across horizontally. One second here. I had, there were lightning bolts shooting across the sky in the clouds. Coming to within perhaps a half mile of me, maybe even a tad closer than that. And then lightning strikes on the ground, between 2 and 3 miles away. Actually, maybe, 2 to 3 miles away. A few of those. But luckily, and I was scared, I was going to do more filming, but I was. The point that the lightning was closest to me, it was raining some, and so, not much. There wasn't a lot of rain, but enough that I didn't want to get my camera, damage my camera. But also, fear kicks in. I started visualizing the some of these lightning strike victims, most of whom die, and it's not uncommon. I mean, it does happen, especially if you're out here, and I've got all these stainless steel water canteens I'm carrying, and 10 pounds of lead weights in my hands. I'm asking for trouble. But I did film a little bit, but it some outlines of Eagle Mountain, with most of the electrical activity just east and south of Eagle Mountain. Maybe Chiriaco Summit, maybe a bit farther east than that. And man, that was lit up for a long, long time. Very, just spectacular stuff. But felt good to be up here in that element, being rained on and having these electrical storms around me. This plain or plateau that I'm on was sitting in the middle of about five areas that that encircled me, to the south, to the north, to the east, to the west, and in between, five different places where there was a lot of lightning activity, close, within, 5 to 10 miles at the farthest, and it was amazing. I did glumly reflect on my being the error, or the possible error, of my being preoccupied with cellular towers and microwave transmitters and satellites, etc., when the most dangerous threat to me could have been this natural electrical phenomena. But luckily I wasn't struck. But I was mildly elated. I would have been more elated if this hike had occurred on a day that I didn't have to work near a cell tower, and had some elevation gain in the course of the hike that, as opposed to this flatness, that allowed my circulatory system to be more utilized. Inspiring words, what can I say? You know, what is the, you know, to my intended audience, which is whomever out there. Because it is with awe that I look upon someone like a Dane Wigginton right now. I mean, I am just mildly suspicious because he is so just laser focused, honed in, not distracted by anything, it appears. It is all about the cause of changing the course we're on. And he's so full of these statements of dire predicament. And we are. There's no doubt about it. But for me, so much of my day, so much of my personal life is filled with levity and sexual urges and humor and eating. You know, I mean, it's just these normal functions are so, these primitive urges are, have such the upper hand in me. I would like to think that when I do line up and take a swing, I do hit the ball farther, harder and farther than most people, because I have so much natural energy and just native enjoyment of this incarnation, of this existence. You know, it's there. This is not an intellectual activity for me. It's not, I'm not alienated. You know, Dane is somewhat wooden, and I'm, you know, but he is doing the best he can, and the audience that he brings to himself, brings in, because I think he is so professional, so purposeful, so limited or narrow in his scope of inquiry, he brings more people in. It's almost as if he's got a following now. And I think enough truth shines in my work. I mean, real truth. Just people know not to get involved with me. I've had a few crazy hangers-on. A couple of women from England. And some others that that was too bad, but for the most part I think my writing spoke enough to their true identity that they knew that I my limited existence was not the answer to their search. And I certainly don't want to give or present an aura of certainty, false certainty, that would bring people to me for answers, because I'm unwilling to provide them, and I do not have them, especially in my limited state. I ate a couple of pizzas this weekend. Trader Joe's pizza made in Italy, all organic, mozzarella, cheese, and pizza, wheat crust, tomato paste, whatever it is that's on there. It's a good pizza. And I add a bunch of numerous slices of raw organic cheese on it. And I had a similar one made by another company called Cadia that is sold through independent health food stores. That's what I had today. But whilst very satisfying, I reflect though that this past summer, for example, when I went a month or so without any cheese, or at least not cheese in quantity like this, and almost no wheat products, my skin looked great, and I felt more alive than I'd felt in a long time, which is also partly due to my hiking routine. But I know that too much cheese is just not a good thing, but in moderation, if it's organic and grown humanely or produced humanely from those blessed animals, I think there's a place for it. Or at least I certainly haven't given up on it. Okay, I'm looking around me. I see some beautiful cumulus clouds, but the sky, though is dimming, is a pale blue. And earlier today were numerous chemtrails that seem to dissipate rapidly, but which means they're just dropping their contents on the ignorant masses below. I will be referring frequently to people who inspire me or people that I'm reflecting on. I just can't help but do that. And so I think it was this past Saturday, listening to Dane Wigginton's hour address, which is presented live on a radio station in Northern California and then posted to the web as a downloadable MP3. But he describes going outside at night after a day of heavy spraying, and then taking his flashlight and having it illuminate a spire, of light, a column of light up or sideways, he didn't say, but then describing the snow, the white flakes that are like a soup flowing through this thing in the air. And I've seen the same thing. There is a massive difference here in the desert in terms of the particulate matter present in the air on a spraying day versus on a non-spraying day. Of course, there can be dust storms or atmospheric conditions that are kicking up more material, but still, my overall impression is one of a stark contrast. And yes, it is just chunks of white stuff flying through the light beam on chemtrail days, and I'm seeing unusual responses in the dust, where the dust hits my light and it immediately changes direction. I mean, it's like my light is a river, and these are leaves or dust motes entering the river and then flowing with it. And so while some of the larger pieces or some of the pieces may pass through the light beam, quite a lot of it is caught in the light beam and blasts upward or outward along the trajectory of the beam of light. So I don't know what that is. I don't know if that's a natural, normal response for a, you know, typical particle suspended in the air, but I'm inclined to think that metallic particles and synthetic crystalline structures and these other things that may be sprayed upon us, that they have an unusual reactivity to light. If I just had to say that Dane's comment was consistent, or his observation was consistent with mine. So, words of encouragement here. You go through hard times, times when your resolve is tested. But you have to have a vision, a desire, a dream. That you cling to, that fills you with determination. I have heard that survivors of the Holocaust, many of them or some of them, in the concentration camps, it was reading a book called The Survivor in a course on the Holocaust I took at UC Berkeley in the early 80s. And if I recall correctly, because we did read a number of books, but the survivor's intention, this guy interviewed a number of survivors of the concentration camps, was to bear witness, that is, not to die, so as to tell the story, in the hopes that the same tragedy did not happen again. So to bear witness, to give testimony to the effect of causing a remembrance, a moral corrective to avoid this large-scale moral failure. Now that might not be a happy aspiration, but it's a necessary one. You know, people's dreams are born of their circumstances. It's what's needed, it's what's necessary, and it's been my contention all along that potential, our dreams, our capacity to transcend is aligned with, and very similar to, Maslow's hierarchy. That is, you need your basic needs to be met. Safety, food, shelter, physical safety, emotional safety, etc. And then, you know, there's another layer above that, and then you get to the, you know, the self-actualizing stuff where your needs have been met so fully that your higher creative or spiritual potential is unlocked or unleashed or intensified. So people need to have a dream. And if that dream is just simply to not have a group of fascists line you up and shoot you due to your religious or sexual or racial identity, then that is certainly a part of what's necessary. And certainly, if your life experience has been shaped by that evil of depriving you of your dignity and your safety and of all of your access to well-being and wellness, and that's what it is. So, you know, it could be, you know, a certain book that needs to be written. You know, I go back and I've looked at, for example, the Carlos Castaneda series or the J.R.R. Tolkien series or even the Oz books. And I see glaring inadequacies that this material can be improved upon. And I could have done a number of things. You know, I just for me, you know, how this commitment, how this dedication is arrived at varies greatly. You know, it could be a young girl seeing her mother raped or beaten, or have that happen to herself. And in that crucible of experience, become a women's suffrage activist, or a gun rights activist, or a, you know, a lawyer intent upon rectifying certain things. I mean, I don't know, it's typically an intense formative experience that creates or co-creates your vision for yourself. Something intense, and you arrive at something that a vision for your life, a vision for, you know, a northern, a pole star in your life trajectory. So that in moments of doubt, moments of darkness, you look at it and it draws you forward. You may not know where your intermediate steps are taking you, but you know that they're taking you to the long-term destination that your life is set upon. And so, for me, I was I was 20 years old, and wrestling with the application of various yogic concepts that I was reading about in some kind of a Hindu mysticism class, where we're reading Mircea Eliade's Yoga, Immortality, and Freedom, and Gopi Krishna's Kundalini, the Evolutionary Energy in Man, and some other texts, and perhaps a reader that was bound Xerox copies of excerpts of various books. Wrestling and applying various things, kicking people out of my life due to their lack of intensity, moving to a small basement living a basement rental, had a view, but it was still in the basement in the Berkeley Hills. But a very quiet place that was an older Quaker couple owned it and lived there. Doing breathing exercises, meditation exercises, and contemplating a lot about these various topics. And I'm not going to get into it now because it would just throw my brain, just hit my, it would just, I don't like getting too close to that episode, but desiring a divine love to permeate my being and contemplating the love in my life and how much I was grateful, how much love there existed between me and many, many people in my life, and how I wanted it to be a perpetual self-reinforcing perception. I think it was Ramakrishna that I'd read about, or someone, who responded to the question of what is it like to be conscious of the divine or conscious of God, and he said, his answer was that it was like God making love to every pore of your body, and I wanted that. I was a spoiled materialist who had my senses fulfilled for many years, living in a privileged lifestyle and a privileged time in the most privileged nation on the planet. I wanted more. However it came to be about, I wanted to convert or transcend all that material satisfaction and lay claim to a subtle awareness of a more permanent and profound connection, or sense of connection and self-identity. And it was perhaps the first, perhaps as they say, I think maybe it was the second night of my deciding, okay, this is how I'm going to do it. I knew what these various experiences yielded. Didn't really know how to get there. Wasn't happy with meditation on an effulgent flower like Gopi Krishna had done. I just knew, I had an innate sense that that was not my path. And I decided I'm just like a pit bull, gonna go after an emotional, love-based desire, just seize upon it and not let it go until something burst in me. And it was on the second night of this that I think I had tears streaming down my face and had worked myself in quite a lather. And then I fell asleep, at least I believe I fell asleep. And within moments or minutes, within a few minutes of my falling asleep or entering that state where your consciousness or your self-consciousness recedes, and the deeper wisdom of your autoimmune system takes over. Your autonomic nervous system, maybe it's all the same thing. What do we know? Explosion, just devastating explosion from the base of my spine with that just pounded at my head, just throbbing. I don't remember if it was bursts or continuous. I don't remember right now. But just bursts to my head, and then at least my hands were equally inundated with this, for lack of a better term, Kundalini energy. But it's, what is it? I don't know what it is. I've reflected upon it. It's kind of a philosophical question. Turning on my headlamp right now. But it's subtle energy, or it's Kundalini. It's cosmic consciousness. It's, you know, they say that lightning there's a connection to outer space, and there's bursts of X-rays that accompany lightning that cannot be explained without bringing into these newly discovered sprites that are lightning blasts 100 miles up that occur during larger lightning strikes. The Earth has a metabolism. And the lightning is not just we don't even know how it's formed, but it's not a creature of a collection of water molecules in some white cloud. It's far more amazing than that, complex and profound than that. It is literally a cosmic ray. It is I'll get into that some other time. The point is, just as there's a whole lot more going on with lightning in terms of other energies, a vacuum, a space vacuum occurring in that line that is the lightning strike, so it is I as I've wondered, is this profound flow of energy that occurs in Kundalini awakening, you know, is it like a lightning strike? Where is this cosmic consciousness coming from? You know, it's, or is it this potential that exists at every, in every atom, in the universe? And what role does a living entity have to do with it? So it's either, you know, a higher energy, or it's some mechanism to transform and transmute the lower functioning, you know, giving the lower body mind the capacity, the power to conduct much greater energy, much more powerful and profound in energy. I don't know. But this energy that night flooded my being, flowed out of my hands, and I would like to say my feet, but I don't remember right now. Let's just say it was all my, my whole being was flooded. I mean, that would be the most likely outcome. My whole being was flooded with this awakening, and it wouldn't go away. It was maddening. And it was either that night or the next night where it became commonplace for me not to be able to sleep unless I had walked 2 or 3 hours before bed. And I had to restrict my mental functioning. I couldn't read or engage intellectual inquiry or even watch a movie within an hour or two of bed, because my central nervous system would be too stirred. But part of my achieving sanity there during that, let's say that first week of awakening, that I was dealing with for years, but it got increasingly under control, but at least, you know, less intrusive in my, you know, in my normal daily functioning. But in addition to being more moderate in my thinking, in my sexual activity, and walking more, no longer could I run. It was too jarring to my nervous system. But I had to have something I was reaching for, something that would give me some purpose that would help me congeal all of this stuff happening in me. You know, give shape to my life's vision. And I had an innate disgust, distrust of organized religion and of charismatic leaders in general. People are too easily manipulated, led, abused, what have you. And I just would have no part of it. You know, I could be the greatest prophet since Jesus himself, or since these various Hindu saints, some of whom have gone up in light. You know, I didn't want that. I wanted to be a regular person on the outside, for the most part. And so I wanted to create a new Bible. That's what I wanted. I wanted to write a book. I knew I was a good writer. I liked to write. And my mind was far sharper back then. And every idea, every proposal, every action that I was witness to, or read, or considered, I had an immediate, direct appraisal of it. They came from very deep inside of me. It was like I was a mirror image. I was like the truth serum, the laser of love, laser light of love. I mean, it was for everything. And so I started collecting all these books. I started, you know, my plan was to create an alternate Bible. And that is what I'm doing now. It's not, you know, my life didn't turn out the way I had planned. I didn't really have a plan except that I was going to provide some intellectual guidance and experiential guidance or feedback on this process that I had stumbled upon purposefully. And and the various considerations, cultural reflections that I had engaged, because I believed, not as sure of it now, but I believed that an enlightened mind thinks differently. That the insights that I can share in terms of my perspective in interacting with people would have a transformative effect on others. And I felt that I would be able to alter people's lives, alter their consciousnesses, heal people directly through my writing. I still have that hope, but I have really been hit with a, you know, 5-foot diameter trunk of some tree just been slammed against me with this man-made EMF awareness. More than awareness, I mean, it just hurts and it disorients and it destroys me. But, you know, I'm going to carry on the best that I can. But that's the point, what I want to share here, because I am now at the turnaround point. I'm going to lie down and gaze at the stars and the moon here. Take off my shoes and my shorts and just lay nude in the desert on a shirt. If I brought a sweatshirt, it might get colder, but later I'm going to lie down on the sweatshirt to cushion me a little bit more against the small pebbles here. But that helped me. It was like a pact with God, but that was just a pact with myself that I had to have a moral case for petitioning for leniency, you know, and granting my sanity, and granting permission for me to carry this torch of insight forward with an intact and healthy body, mind, and spirit. I had to engage healthful practices. But I was already a fit person, but you know, the walking every day, the mental conditioning, the mental restraint, the sexual restraint, and then lastly, the intellectual purpose, the moral purpose, and fundamentally my desire to not be someone sitting on a golden dais somewhere, like a lot of wayward prophets go, having others set them up as the divine. Certainly gotta be some perks to that. The submission, the absolute submission of your sexual partners. I mean, that's kind of cool. Anyone you want. I don't want that karma. I don't want that. But I can see the appeal of that. But it was my desire to be self-sufficient and to carry on as a normal person and to try to cast a vision and demonstrate the capacity of someone with this extraordinary insight to carry on as a normal person in this modern world. It's been more than I can handle. I bit off way more than I could chew, largely due to EMF. I would have never left Honolulu, most likely. I would have been there still, had it not been for this environmental sensitivity. That's only grown worse with the explosion, the proliferation of this technology. But it was my humility and the desire to just be one with my species, not be singled out for special treatment. That helped to also ground my insight and my pain. So there's a lot of both. And I'm seeing now a lightning storm, maybe 10 miles off, northeast. Beautiful. Okay, that's over and out right now, and to be continued another time. Tomorrow's Monday and the beginning of another week of work. Trying to raise the spirits, and it's not, it's way more than that, because you do have to kick some ass. There are a lot of people that are obstacles to insight and to spiritual conductivity. And if you're coming to my workplace without a commitment to industry and kindness, I will kick your ass. And I'll ride you so hard. I have no tolerance for people who want something for nothing and want to pass off their suffering for to other people. Just not on my watch. Thank you very much, but keep your machinations and suffering to yourself. Don't spread your poison. Not here. Not on my dime. Not on the taxpayers' dime that I'm in charge of. Okay, enough. You take care, and I will talk to you again. Bye.